Hey, what are you listening to?
Oh, you didn't get that?
Get what?
Themnutspodcast.com.
Welcome to Them Nuts Podcast Show. I'm the producer, Luis Gomez, hosted by comedians Darius Campbell and Ray Chung, along with Bucky, the executive producer. You can find Them Nuts on all your social media networks, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or follow and listen to us on Podomatic.com.
Some of you who actually know me a little bit know that I'm a terrible human being. I'd like to say that. I'm a bad person. I ruined my friend's wedding a couple years ago. Not on purpose. Not at the wedding. At the wedding it was fine. Just retroactively I ruined their wedding is what happened. Because as a man, it says like you're sort of giving up in life when you see like a photo of a tiny diamond on a big fat sausage finger. Like that's... Like my friend got engaged on Christmas Day, and it looked like a grain of salt on a bratwurst. That's all I'm saying. Then they held their wedding 5 days later, because you want to spend 5 days planning your wedding, I guess. I don't know. So I go to their shitty wedding, and I ate their shitty plate of Costco shrimp. And they know I'm an asshole. They know I'm an asshole. So I go there and I sat in the back row doing what assholes do. I was tweeting jokes about their shitty wedding while they were getting married. Look, it was anonymous. I didn't use their name. They're not on Twitter. They're never gonna fucking know, right? So I'm tweeting things like, yeah, I always love going to weddings where I'm better dressed than the groom. If you get married, put on a fucking tie, okay? It's not that hard, right? Yeah. I tweeted jokes. It was like, you know, it's never a good sign when the wedding picture is taken from the fat girl angle. No, she was dressed in like this 40s pinup sailor outfit type dress for the wedding. And I was like, oh, yeah, she's in a sailor outfit because her belly looks like a torpedo. And then, I know it's mean, but I'm a dick. They know I'm a dick. What do they expect? And plus, they're not on Twitter. They're never going to see it, right? So 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from the husband who's very upset. Very upset with me. Because apparently they decided to finally check out what this whole Twitter thing is all about. And he tells me that the wife is upset and she's crying and throwing up in the bathroom. And I was like, you're welcome. It's a start. She took all the things that I'd said on Twitter anonymously that nobody would have ever known were about them. She copy-pasted them to her own Facebook page. So everyone that she knows could see the things that I had written about her shitty wedding. So then I started getting like angry messages on Twitter from all these people she used to work with on different TV shows where she did costumes and whatever. And I get this message from a guy who's like... on the TV show Numbers, because she used to work on that show, and he's like, you should be ashamed of yourself. Not just for the things you wrote, but for being a low-level comedian. I was like, well, you should be ashamed of yourself for being on a network TV show for 5 years and only having 2,000 more Twitter followers than I do.
I show up, she's like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I left my shit. Sorry.
Yeah, it was starting.
I'm a good fuck.
That's how every podcast starts. Hey, we've been having great conversations. Darius says something stupid. Let's hit record and see if we can catch up.
And welcome to Them Nuts Podcast, a very formal comedy show where we introduce guests and tell the world and educate them on comedy 101. Take action. Now you like that, bitch? Yeah, welcome, guys. Fucking, where's the energy?
We're
back in the studio. Yeah,
we've
had
the energy. You got in the room and it went down again. Go figure.
Yeah, that is cool. Good, I'm in the room, man.
Fucking awkward now.
Yeah. Oh, because the black guy's in the room now.
It's fucking awkward.
That is some racist shit.
You brought your home energy over here.
Oh man, damn. They don't like recording out of my house because of the kids, and it's a bigger vaulted ceiling. I feel like we're much closer together when we record out of my home. Like, we're
that's
right up
the
under
problem,
each other.
Dude.
Yeah, like, instead of, like, here we can be spread out, but when we're in my house, it's like, I'm rubbing elbows with Ray, you know, and then Louis sitting on the rugs.
mind you, you don't have to rub elbows. There is enough room to spread out, but you actually set it to where it's like a weird circle jerk.
I didn't. We don't normally fucking do that way. Some Mr. Dickwad over there set up on the wrong side. That's our producer, Mr. Dickwad. He set it up on the wrong side because normally he sets the couch up and where you were sitting. And that's where he produces out. I stand up by my TV. You're like, it's like, well, what the fuck you guys are talking about? I've never been here. House. I don't know. What the fuck you talking
about? I don't care. The listeners don't care. And our guest today doesn't care. Who do we got in house? Who's in the studio tonight? What's your name, man?
My name is Matt Walker.
Oh, hi, Matt Walker.
Hi,
welcome
Matt Walker.
To the
Hello.
Meeting.
Yes.
To the insult of Darius.
My name is Matt Walker, and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Not really, actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, he's got
one. Oh, we're all alcoholics.
Yeah,
no, we're alcoholics. We're excited.
Yeah.
I thought that's what we're here.
Yeah, yeah, drink.
No, we're excited to have you. And if you guys don't know Matt Walker, a very, very funny comedian, just recently released his first album.
First album, debut.
First
album.
Yeah, debuted.
So. What's it called?
Hater.
Really?
Yep.
The cover art is great, man.
No, it matters a lot.
H-A-R, just H, the letter number 8, and the R. It's perfect.
Yeah. I did like you know those no hate pictures,
yeah,
like with the duct tape and the no hate on the cheek, and I did that, but it says hater on my cheek. I already had people on Twitter like bitching at me about that too.
They're already yelling at you on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, I get yelled at on Twitter constantly. That's why
that no hate things for against like against homosexuality, right? That's what it
no,
is?
It's
pro gay marriage,
it's
is what
oh,
it is.
Pro gay marriage,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah, okay.
And what I did, it has nothing to do with homosexuality or gay marriage, whatever. I'm
you should have had
marriage.
Like dildos in the
No, I had like, you know, teenagers like, oh, look at the straight white male comedian co-opting the gay slogan or whatever. I'm just like, whatever. You're
retarded. Jesus.
I'm fucking awesome. Taking everything a little too literal there.
Well, I get a lot of hate mail on Twitter, which
I
don't
mind.
Is
like,
at least
they're
looking at you.
The only bad publicity is no publicity.
I would much rather have people hate me than not care about me.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
So, and then I take all my good hate mail and I put it on mattwalkersucks.com.
One more time. What's the web address? I want to go to it.
That's mattwalkersucks.com.
Mattwalkersucks.com.
That's where, like, it's weird because it's like 14-year-old girls and they get mad because I make fun of One Direction and then, like, they tell me stuff like, go sit on a cactus. And
14-year-old tells you to go sit on a cactus? Wow.
But do you ever respond?
I rarely do. Sometimes when I do respond, it's usually because then I just correct their spelling, which drives them crazy. Because they're all dumb as shit. They're just stupid. They're
of course,
stupid
they respond
people.
To that stupid shit. Yeah.
So I just like, you know, I don't know.
Are you the ones like you change the your to the YOU to possibly RE
and put it in red?
You know, like I've had stuff. I mean, because I do a bit on the album where I actually read some of my favorite hate mail that I got. And you know, like one of my all-time favorites was because I tweeted something about Chris Brown on his birthday, and it was like, happy, because I go to the trending topics on Twitter, and I look what's trending, then I like make jokes about that stuff, and it's always like boy bands and pop stars or whatever, and I make fun of that, and then their fans get mad, and then that's when they send me stuff, because like one was, happy birthday, Chris Brown, was trending, and I was like, happy birthday, Chris Brown, be sure to have some punch with your cake. That's what I said. Yeah, it's easy joke, right?
Easy.
And then
easy.
somebody said to me, shut up, you Horton Hears a Who looking motherfucker.
Whoa.
Which is my all-time favorite.
Yeah, that's pretty creative. Pretty creative.
I'm like, okay, I can cross with that. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But I get stuff all the time, like, you know, I'll tweet something about One Direction, and they're like, stick a knife up your ass. You know, like.
You ever get death threats?
2 years ago, I got 14 death threats.
Really?
In 1 year. And I didn't count last year, and I haven't counted this year, but I've got, I get them. I only count the ones where they say, I'm going to kill you. I don't count the ones where they say, go die, because I get hundreds of those.
Telling you to do work.
Yeah, that doesn't count, because I get hundreds of those every year. But the ones where they say, I'm going to kill you,
because
I get them where they're like, oh, I'm going to get a gun, I'm going to go find you, I'm going to shoot you. I'm like, I'm like, you're a 12-year-old in Portugal. Sure, go ahead. Hop on a plane.
Hey, that one that went and stashed himself, he was coming for you, man.
Well, because now when I get death threats, I'm just like, okay, so if you want to find me, I'll be at the John Lovitz Comedy Club on May 24th at 10 p.m. Come on out.
Put you in too on the list. So,
I'll put you on the guest list.
Yes.
Come on out.
Most definitely. So when's your next show?
May 24th.
Oh, really? At John Lovitz Comedy Club.
That's like the next big one. You know, I do you know, little ones all the time, but it's the only one worth promoting is May 24th at the Ice House, or the John Lovitz Comedy Club, City Walk.
You're headlining?
10 p.m. No, I mean, I do a lot of shows with Mike Muratori. Do you guys know Mike?
Yeah. Funny
okay.
guy.
Very funny comic. And, so.
What was it called? Serial Killer Comedy?
Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
I remember I was there when we sort of came up with that nickname for him too. It was at the Universal Bar and Grill. I don't think I came up with it, but it was at the Universal Bar and Grill. We're sitting around. This is like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about craziness because he's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And somehow we came up with a name. And then I remember I made him his first business cards. And I took that painting of John Wayne Gacy of him as a clown. And that was the picture on the business card, was John Wayne Gacy as a clown.
Yeah.
And with his info. And it was like the serial killer comedy. And then...
how did that go over? Fucking Gacy.
Oh, he loved it. But, you know, most people didn't know who it was. And they're like, oh, that's a creepy clown. We're like, oh, yeah, it is.
No, very yeah, creepy clown.
Yeah.
Very creepy.
He was a very good serial killer. If you consider what he does, he was very good at it.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, if you consider what he does.
Yeah. He really, was very
he really set the bar. Didn't he set the bar?
He was very good. I mean, look, if you're going to kill children and put them in your crawl space, he was pretty fucking good at it. What did he kill, 18 kids, 19 yeah. kids? I'm like, that was
a scary dude.
He was no slouch.
The best part going back to your mail is he would actually get fan mail when he was in prison.
Oh, yeah.
That was crazy, right? Like,
there used to be a website called murderauction.com where you could buy, like, stuff from... like famous criminals and things like that, and they eventually like it went away, like because eBay kicked all that stuff off eBay, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then on this website they had like John Wayne Gacy paintings and stuff like that, and they were too expensive. I wanted to buy one, but they were like $2,000.
Jeez,
what?
Just for a painting?
Yeah, but I mean it was like, you know, like one of the iconic John Wayne Gacy paintings.
Where
I'm like, that's kind of cool.
Like
my living room.
Oh,
my living room. Well, your bathroom.
Come on, it's creepy. Don't get me wrong, it's creepy,
yeah.
But. You know, but I mean, and then I did buy...
It makes a good conversation piece, doesn't it?
Somebody had written to John Wayne Gacy before he got executed, and they actually got one of his jumpsuits that he wore in prison, and they cut it up into, like, one-inch squares. So I have somewhere in my apartment, I have a one-inch square of John Wayne Gacy's jumpsuit
really?
In prison. You know, but he didn't get any of the money. It all goes to victims, because, like, you know, they can't keep it and stuff. But it's creepy, I admit it. I like creepy stuff.
Yeah. Sounds like a start of a horror movie, man. Like, he was like, they'll clone his DNA from his jumpsuit, and it's like Jurassic Park meets serial
It'll
killers.
Be like in Child's Play when Chucky comes back because he gets possessed
be
by
like,
the murder.
Man.
Maybe I'm really...
why are you into like serial killers?
I'm fascinated by all kinds of weird stuff. I don't know. I always liked, you know, true crime stuff growing up. I like... You know, I love watching all those documentaries on that stuff.
Are you taking notes? Or are you like the psychologist? I'm just curious.
Not taking any notes, and I do watch all the bad movies. Like, there's a ton of bad serial killer movies on Netflix.
Yeah,
I don't
think
watch them. But, like, you know, the John Wayne Gacy one is kind of cool because the guy who plays John Wayne Gacy played Francis in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. So every time I see him, I'm just like, I want my bike, Francis. You know, like, that's what I always think. Because it's that guy. It's weird.
That's hilarious. So how would you kill someone?
How I would kill someone is I would call somebody to have them do it for me. Like, I wouldn't do it.
OJ it. OJ it, huh?
You think OJ called somebody to do it for him?
You gotta get rid of the body.
Wait a minute. You think OJ didn't actually do it?
No.
Like, he wasn't there?
He was there, but he didn't do it.
Well, who do you think did it?
The driver.
Who?
The driver.
Why?
Because he was his friend.
Who's the driver?
How much would it take for me to convince you to kill someone? That's not my, you're my buddy, Darius. You're my buddy, Darius.
Dude, all you have to do is ask.
Look, I met Cato Kalin, and I'm 100% positive that Cato just covered everything up for him. That's
really?
What I'm positive. Yes. 100% sure of that.
Well, did Cato work for OJ, or did he work
for... He just lived there in his guest room because he was OJ's, like, drug-running guy. Like, he's the guy who get drugs for OJ.
Yeah, okay.
And he's like, oh, hang out in my guest room, because I don't care. Guest house, whatever.
Right, okay.
No, but we had the same argument with someone about a week ago. I don't think OJ did it.
Wait, you have arguments about OJ Simpson every week?
No, not on our show. Because what it all started with, I guess he was trying to get out of prison. He's supposedly sick or some shit. That's how it all came up. And then somebody asked me, you know, you're not from here. How did they react in Seattle when OJ died? I said they rioted. I got a couple of shirts out of the deal, so I didn't mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't down there.
Wait. They rioted in Seattle? Yeah. Like the white people rioted or the black people rioted?
Black people.
Why?
He was OJ.
No, but remember when the riots were down here?
That was Rodney King.
They rioted everywhere.
That was Rodney King.
It was Mark Furman. Remember that judgment against him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There wasn't a riot for that.
Well, down here, we had a riot in Seattle for it.
And I for what? Because his name rhymed with a
I think they said he was not guilty for it.
Dude, a ride in Seattle is the seven black people that live there in their same room together. It's just, it's not fair, man. It's...
We got us 150. Come on.
That was when the Seattle Supersonics left. They
I was down here when they left, so I was a little upset about that. So let's not go that route.
But OJ, like, the thing with him is, like, I mean, I was always a big fan of OJ because I have the same birthday as him. And as a kid, I was like, oh, it's cool. OJ Simpson's got my birthday. And then around 1994, I'm like, oh, it's not so cool anymore.
Yeah, you get to celebrate it with OJ.
Yeah. The thing with OJ is, like, I'm 100% sure that he killed those two people and got away with it. But I'm also 100% sure that he got railroaded in Vegas and they just locked him up because they wanted to get revenge and they didn't get him before.
No,
like,
sure.
He totally got screwed in this case where he was taking his own shit back. He got screwed in that case, but
sure.
He's not really a sympathetic
Karma's
character.
A bitch, isn't it?
No, yeah.
He's not a really sympathetic figure.
No, he's never been, and he's never apologized for anything or any harm. Yeah. Didn't he have this? How much was the suit from the family on that? Does anybody know?
Oh, millions and millions. Load, I don't know.
We can Google it later and link it in the description below.
I would appreciate that because I really want to know now. I'm like fucking curious now. We're going to talk murder and all that.
I'm curious. So,
that.
Amy, you've been doing comedy a while. Did you ever have any O.J. Simpson jokes? How long have you been doing comedy?
11 years in June.
Three questions in one. Way to go.
So, no O.J. jokes. I mean, I think like the earliest thing I remember joking about. The funny thing in comedy is like sometimes you get jokes that you write. And then they're sort of topical, and then they go away. And then something happens, and you can bring them back, and you get like excited, and you can tell for like another month or two, and then it goes away. Because I remember when I first started, it was around the time when the Siegfried and Roy attack happened, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I had this joke I did where I was like, you know, it was stupid, because it was a time I was like, oh, you know, they interviewed Monocor the Tiger. They asked him why he did it, and he said it's because Roy tastes great, right? It was stupid. Stupid joke. And so I did that.
Laugh.
Yeah, it was like, you know, 3 months in, whatever. It was a stupid joke. And then I couldn't tell it anymore after, like, a couple months, because people stopped caring.
Yeah.
And then about, like, 3 years later, some dumbass jumped into the tiger enclosure at the San Francisco Zoo, and I'm like, yes, I can do my tiger joke again, you know? And I got to do it for, like, two more months, and then it went away, and there was, like, another tiger attack somewhere, and I got to do it again. So, like,
yeah, I need Tiger Woods to fuck more white bitches because I can't use that joke anymore.
Because like sometimes stuff happens where things are like that, they're topical, and then you can't do them because they just stop working.
That's
eventually.
The problem with topical jokes, yeah, exactly.
Because I know some people that are very topical with what they do, and it's like that's really hard to do on an ongoing basis because you don't really have an act that you can use. I mean, what are you be? The next Argus Hamilton? Is that like your goal in life, I guess?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, that guy's had a good career.
Yeah.
Can't knock it. He was on Tonight Show like 80 times.
New shit every time.
But it's every single night as he pulls out the newspaper and just does his thing. But I mean, that sort of keeps you from, you know, the sort of big outlet for us as a comic, you know, the real money goal is to get a sitcom. Right? And a guy like that is never going to get a sitcom.
Right.
Well, like South Park, they're very topical. I mean, but I think that's the only one example. Because they're pulling out.
No,
I mean,
yeah, but
like,
they also don't do stand-up.
Topical
yeah, that's
well,
true.
But it's,
yeah. But I mean, like, if they're able to keep up on, like, current topics.
Yeah, and there's stuff, and, you know, and I think crazy. It kind of hurts reruns of their shows in some ways. Like, you watch things now and you're like, oh, well, that was funny at the time, I guess. But now it's like, eh. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, their show doesn't hold up as well as it would if it wasn't. Like, you know, look at a show like, say...
The Simpsons.
Simpsons or Futurama or whatever, where it's more tightly crafted, where like they write a joke and then it's a year later before it gets on the air, right? South Park, they write a joke and a week later it's on TV, which is really impressive. And it makes a lot of the stuff they do really funny at the time. But also it means like I look back and there's like a show I remember watching at the time about like, you know, the election in 2000 in Florida and how this girl Flora couldn't make up her mind because they were having like an election in preschool and she couldn't decide or whatever. And it was like at the time it was really funny, man. I've seen it lately. I'm just like, oh, yeah, that was funny. But it's like I don't laugh at it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
I get you.
So now
except,
are you on TV? Or,
except when Scott Tenorman had to eat his parents because of Cartman, that fucking holds up. All right.
Have you done any TV work and all that?
I didn't I've done zero TV work.
Really?
None. I mean, like, I've you know, done a little bit of stuff behind the camera. I'm like, you know, the tiniest part of parts in my friend's TV show. My friend's on Big Time Rush on Nickelodeon. I had like a tiny, tiny part in that, but it hardly counts. You know, I was there for like 2 hours on the set. It doesn't matter, you know.
That's a long time on the
nothing
set.
That's like a real meaty. I'm in a really crappy movie called Tears of a Clown. starring Don D.C. Curry.
It's about John Wayne Gacy, too?
No. It's about a young man who's trying to become a comedian and has started like all black comics. It was like a black movie, and I was one of the few white people in the movie.
Nice. I've got to put this out because some ladies asked me the other day, is how come there's never a white guy in black movies?
There is.
I'm going to tell them. There's at least one or two.
We were in a scene because I was in with Dante.
White token guy?
Yeah, okay.
Dante got me in. He's got to have a white token.
Yeah, Dante got me in with him because Dante had like a little bit of a meaty part. And not meaty, he was in for like 2 minutes, and I was in it for like 12 seconds with my two lines, one of which got cut. So so the only line I have, and you actually don't see me saying it, you hear the words when I'm off camera, then they cut back to me for the reaction shot, is where I get to say, "Sorry, Wally." That's my line. If you watch Tears of a Clown, that's me saying sorry, Wally. Because the movie's about like a young black comic and how he's like trying to make it in the world. And Don D.C. Curry, who's a huge black comic. Like, he's not real mainstream if you're outside of like, you know, the BET crowd. But I mean, he was huge. He's a big deal. Really funny guy. And he sort of like mentors this younger guy through his career. And then they have a falling out. But at one point, he takes him to like this redneck bar. And then there's like a... like they get chased out because the guy hooks up with one of the white waitresses and the people at the redneck bar don't take kindly to it, you know. So I was one of the rednecks there at that bar.
You were one of the rednecks?
Yeah. So I'm there.
That
and
makes
then,
it even better.
Yeah, like Dante's like the main redneck in the bar. Yeah.
You know. That's great.
So it was all comics in the movie. And like then we go see the movie at the premiere and like it was so bad. I mean, look. I don't want to mention anybody's names who are like involved making it because they're all very nice people and they are
shitty.
Still involved in the industry. But it sounded to me like they spent a lot more time on the soundtrack than on the movie. Because like
that's
you,
not the
you,
first that they've done that.
You couldn't hear the voice. All you hear is the music super loud in the background the whole time, and it's just like, okay, I can't hear what's going on. Like I'm in the thing. I don't know what's going on.
What was that airplane? What was the movie with Snoop Dogg in it?
Soul Plane.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen Soul Plane. Yeah. Then they did the remake of Car Wash with him and Eminem and stuff. That was because why remake Car Wash? It's such a great movie.
Yeah.
Why fuck with that? You got Richard Pryor, you got George Carlin, you got a good soundtrack.
Yeah.
The whole thing was great. I don't know.
Yeah, well, Dr. Dre and Snoop did that one.
Yeah, and it's Dr. Dre is about to be a billionaire.
Three of them.
Well, no, he's half business partner, so he gets half.
He gets like 25% of the money. Well, it's...
Well, like the record executive.
Yeah, because he put up $0 to start that company, Beats. He lent his name to it, is what he did.
Jimmy Iovine?
So it's, Jimmy Iovine was part of it, and then it was Monster Cable put up a lot of the money, but they didn't get any. They signed a stupid deal, Monster Cables, which I find enjoyable because they're such a scummy company. They signed a terrible deal because I read a whole article about it, Atlantic Magazine a couple months ago. They talked about how the whole thing came together, and then it was like Dre and Jimmy Iovine that sort of put the thing together, and then they had some money people that were involved, and then Monster Cable was the one who was making all the stuff.
Yeah.
And then after a while, they're like, wait, we don't need Monster. We'll just get our own company, our own factory in China to make all the stuff, and they just got aced out, but Monster signed a bad deal, so they didn't have the rights to anything. Like, Monster designed everything, and they gave it to Beats, and Beats was like, okay, we own this now, and then goodbye, and then they just got aced out of everything. And then they started their own headphone thing with somebody else, Monster. I forget who it is now, but it's not nearly as big.
Well, I heard like 50 Cent or something is supposed to be... Like, he was going to come out with the one... The same time as Dre, but then he put us on hold because.
Well, but I heard that
the Dre thing. I don't know.
I heard that the majority of the money are what Apple really wants it for is because of their catalog, their music catalog, that they compete with the Spotify label.
Yeah, right it's now. You know, it's Beats has become like a lifestyle brand.
Yeah,
almost where like Apple wants it for a couple reasons. I mean, they want it for branding. Mm-hmm. They want it because then that really. Cement Apple's name with other people.
If you buy a new iPhone, are you going to get like Beats?
There'll be Beats headphones with it, I bet. Like Beats.
Well, because
earbuds.
There's already Beats on Samsung, too. Isn't it Samsung has the Beats?
I think it's Hewlett Packard had something. HP, I know, had to deal with Beats on their computers, well, but Samsung anymore. Might. Yeah.
The THC.
HTC or whatever,
HTC. Okay, yeah.
So they'll be like.
THC. He's thinking weed. Weed has some Beats on it, too.
Yeah, they'll be like Beats audio built into Apple, which basically just means like tuned. Turned up bass. That's what it is. That's all it is. Like, you know, like because audiophiles don't like their stuff. It doesn't sound any better. It's just expensive because it's a brand. And that's what I want to know is, like, how did giant headphones come back, though? Because, like, we'd gone from, like,
yeah.
We went from, like, okay, when I was a kid, we went from, like, the boombox on the shoulder, right? To then it was, like, okay, you have the Walkman.
To the giant earmuff
and then,
ones.
Like, then you go to, like, the earbuds, and then it was, like, even smaller earbuds, so you can't even see. And then all of a sudden, you go back to, like, the giant cans on your ears. I don't know how that happened.
Beats by Dre.
Yeah.
That's what it was. He said it was cool, so now it's cool. Yeah, yeah. So
I mean, and look, you will not find a bigger fan of Dr. Dre than me. I'm telling you. I may not look like it.
Did you ever see his old school picture where he's like in an actual doctor suit?
Look, yeah. I have so that pretty. Because yeah, I have the album that Eazy-E put out where he put the picture in it.
Yeah.
Where trying to, you know, the one with... Real Compton City G's, which is real motherfucking G's.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
One of my all-time
what
favorite.
What does NWA stand for?
Niggas with attitude.
Damn it, you fucked it up.
My fault,
I don't care.
My bad. Say it. Fuck it.
I'm not saying it.
Why is
it's
that
the name of
the
band? Why can't you say the name? Is saying the name of the band make me a racist? Because that's how you pronounce it.
No, because
this
ain't no Donald Sterling shit up in here.
I will only.
Was just trying to. It was a stupid. I'm playing with your motherfuckers.
I will only use the N-word when I'm rapping along with NWA lyrics. Is when I will do it.
Put the lyrics up for him.
Because like I could do stuff like. Fuck the motherfucking police. They don't want peace. They want a nigga deceased, so we cease to be a problem. And by the way, their performance seems the Klan gave the white police another uniform. And you're the black police, the house niggas. They gave you a motherfucking gun, so I guess you figured you made out good to go. But you didn't know they would stick your black ass back in the ghetto, yo. Stuff like that. Right? So, like, I will do it then.
Throw that shit in here.
I will do that.
Let's do 100 miles and run it. Get it out. Get it going.
Run it. Run it. Run it.
Yo, 100 miles and running. MC Ren got a gun. Yeah. I can't remember too much.
You got to think about that.
Yeah.
That's the fuck. That's it.
See, that 100 miles and running EP is probably my favorite rap album.
That's in here.
Like, it's so fucking good. And then led to, you know, Niggas for Life, that album, or Elvis was Zagan, or whatever, how they fucking wrote it on there, because it was written backwards on there, and they had their commercial with everything backwards. But a huge NWA fan when I was growing up.
Damn.
Where are you from?
You're an interesting
I'm from
cat.
LA. I grew up in Pico Rivera, California. Okay.
So parts of
Pico
your
Rivera.
Is,
we got to talk about that.
I was the only white guy.
Okay,
I was the white guy.
Well, I don't.
Wait. So parts of your interest is serial killers while listening to 80s
gangster rap.
And what else are you doing?
Technology. I'm a kind of a nerd.
And we talked about this earlier, but you play drums and shit, right?
Yeah.
So you were drumming along, listening to hip hop. Fucking, this was before the internet too, so you probably got like checked out the library books on like fucking serial killers or like
not so much like library books on that. I don't know. I don't remember what I did back then, but you know, you see stuff on TV.
Yeah,
that's how it comes up. And like, I've just always sort of been fascinated by stuff that is a little odd.
Yeah,
I guess. Like one of my favorite things in life in general is I love people who are the best in the world at something that nobody cares about. You know what I mean? Because, like one of my favorite sports, like, if I were to name my favorite sports for you, it would probably go baseball, football, basketball, boxing, competitive eating. It's right there, number five. Number five is competitive eating. Like, I went to New York City for the very first time. I went to New York just so I could watch the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest on 4th of July. And that was in 2011 I went, and I got to see the last time Takeru Kobayashi got to compete before he had his contractual disputes with him. And then I've seen him down, like I've gone to go see him eat in a taco contest down in Huntington Beach a couple times. I've got photos of Takeru Kobayashi that I have framed. I'm very excited about that.
Those are interesting. Like, I watched that shit in the World's Strongest Man. You ever watch
World's Strongest Man? Love that. Love it. Oh, it's so good.
It's just like seeing big like Viking dudes lift up
that's
rocks
what it
and
is,
shit.
Like giant, everybody's named Magnus von Magnus or something.
I love people who are the best in the world at shit that nobody cares about. Because it's like, but even think about this. Competitive eating. Think about it this way.
Yeah.
In football, right? We just had the NFL draft the last couple days. Okay. 250 guys got drafted, whatever, 275, whatever it is, right? And they're the best of the young people that play football, right?
Yep.
Right. But how many people in this country have ever tried to play football at a competitive level?
Millions a year.
Couple million, right?
Yeah.
Couple million, right? How many people in this country eat? 300 million, that's how many. And there are people who are the best out of those 300 million.
No, but how many of them are actually competitively eating?
No, but I'm saying they're the best at eating in general. You can't do that.
Yeah, that's
true. You haven't tried, but I guarantee you can't eat 70 hot dogs in 10 minutes. You can't do it.
You eat four and you almost want to throw up.
You look at like Sonia Thomas, who's like 98 pounds, 5'2", and she'll scarf down 50. It's amazing. the thing that they physically do.
Yeah. She's taking it like that. Louis said, what's her number?
Yeah. So, like, I'm, you know, like, I'm Facebook friends with, like, you know, 7 or 8 competitive eaters. I'm a big fucking mark for that shit. I love it.
Have you ever tried it yourself?
I can't. Like, I've attempted to see if I could mimic their techniques, yeah. And I'm just like, oh, this doesn't work for me. I can't do it. I would vomit after, like, 3.
They're greasy as shit eater. Hot dogs, too, man. It's the throw them up after 4 hot dog brand. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
I like how everyone has their different strategy. Like, some people just get, like, eat the wiener first and then take the buns and then drink mm-hmm. the water.
Well, there have been really a couple different major techniques. It was back in the day, they used to just pick up the hot dog and eat it, like, on the bun, right? That's how they did it for years and years. And that led to, like, the early 80s when they were, like, you know, 10, 15 in 10 minutes. Like, that was their record, right?
Yeah.
Then, I forget his name. Oh, man, it's killing me. The first Japanese competitor to come over. And I forget his name.
Kobayashi
really,
or something like that?
No, Kobayashi.
Well, Kobayashi is the guy who was the second Japanese competitor to come over. But there was a first Japanese guy who came over, and he set a new world record. And he took it up to, like, 25 hot dogs in 10 minutes. It was like he smashed the record by, like, 10. They were like, oh, my God. Yeah. And then Kobayashi came over, and it became a whole new ballgame. Because he went from 25 in 1 year world record to 50. Like, there were rumors that he was, like, using performance enhancing drugs. There really were. They wanted to test him because it was so
dominant
of performance.
The belly? I got
and
that too, guys. That's
he engaged in a couple different ways of doing it. Like, he experimented with this thing they called the Solomon technique, where he divided the hot dog in two. Solomon technique, and they would eat the two halves at one time. Then he became the guy who he's the guy who really led to where he would separate the dog from the bun crumple it up and dunk it and really slide that down.
Yeah,
I mean, like, there's a lot of technique involved in this stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah.
We should probably stop talking about this because nobody cares.
No, I think this is hilarious. Awesome.
Hey, you'd be very surprised.
I'm the only person who gives a shit about this.
No, because we will get now excited. Yeah. You're going to get more people. Wow.
Well, if
fuck,
you want to change topics, let's talk about one of the reasons we brought you here. And it's something that I have 1,000 questions about. Mm-hmm. You just recorded your first comedy album. You just released it the other day. It's called Hater, Matt mm-hmm. Walker Hater. We could catch it on iTunes and on Amazon.
iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Xbox Music, Spotify, anywhere where there's music online, you can find it.
Okay. God, she stinks. I'm sorry. Talk about the dog. The Sachi, our lap whore, it's really just stinking today.
Sachi has her own website.
Here you go. So how long, I mean, you've been doing, you said, comedy for 11 years. This is your first album. How long, I mean, how much material did you build? I mean, it's a full hour. I listened to it.
Yeah, it's 45 minutes as a recording.
Mm-hmm.
When I went into it, I took all the stuff that I sort of considered current material that I like to do.
Because,
mm-hmm. You know, over 11 years, I've probably written a couple hours worth of which there's probably an hour that I actually would do now. Like, you know, some of it just whatever, you know, garbage. So I took that and I wrote it all out on a sheet of paper. I wrote down all my bits. And then I went through and I marked, okay, these are the for sure A bits. These are the ones that have to go on, right? And I marked all those off. And then I had, you know, that was probably 25 minutes of it where I was like, okay, these are the rock solid ones I know I have to do because they're like my go-to bits.
Yeah.
And then there was like another 20 minutes of it where I went through the list. I'm like, okay, what else should I include? And I really started looking at it in about January. And I just started for that month. I went up probably, I don't know, 20, 25 times in January. And I just would do – I did everything on that list to see what I sort of liked and what I felt. And then I was like, okay, here's the ones I want to put in. And then I came up with my list that was pretty much – it was a pretty solid like 45 to 50 minutes that was right there. That's what I was going to record. And then I started playing around the order and coming up with segues and all that kind of stuff to make it work. And then over time, I wrote a couple new jokes that went up on the album. There was one I wrote the day of that went up on the album. Just because I liked it and it sort of slipped right in.
So did you know you had an end date on hand?
Yeah, I knew what I was going to do because in January is when we booked the date at the Ice House. And set up, we're doing two shows on March 22nd.
So you knew you had to work towards
that
date.
It was March 22nd. I was like, I wanted to get on stage, you know, about 50 times before then.
Yeah.
I think I got on stage like 48 times before then. Didn't quite hit 50, but it was close enough. And then, you know, I sort of locked down that set list and then for like the next couple months I really was just doing the material that was going to be on the album because I wanted to make sure that it was really tight for what I was doing. And then went recorded two shows. After the first one, you know, there's things that I did and I was like, okay, I know. I was like, okay, it's not going to get any better the second time, so like I don't need to worry about that on the second show. So I was able to like really focus on certain things for the second show. Like there was a tag I missed on one of my bits that I was like, how did I not do this tag? So like I did that bit so I could do the tag. Because that's, like, I just, as soon as I got off stage, I just went and started writing notes on the stuff I was going to do on the second one. And then on the second show, which is, you know, right afterwards. And then we recorded that one and then got out of the way, did a few new things. And I was like, let me try this in a slightly different way and see how it goes. And if anybody ever records something, do two shows on the same night if you can. Because I've done things with people before and they've done like one show.
Yeah.
And you need the second show. Because what happens is somebody in the crowd will say something during a bit and it'll disrupt the flow or whatever. And then that bit is now not the way that it is intended to be. It still works because you can adapt as a comic, but it's not the way that you necessarily want to present it to the world because that's not sort of the ideal version of it. So, because like a friend of mine did an album where he just did one show and it came out good, but, you know, it would have been better if he would have done two shows that night because there were things like that that came up in the editing process where it's like, oh, I wish we had another take on this that we could use. And if you have two shows in the same venue on the same night, your room noise and all that kind of stuff is going to be the same. The crowds are going to sound enough like each other because your mics are in the same places and everything. So you're best off if you can do multiple shows in one night in the same venue.
Yeah.
And that's really one of the most important parts of doing it. Yeah.
Now, who did your sound and all your recording for you?
Basically me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like the budget on my album was like $200.
Really?
Like, it was nothing. Right? Because... I
noticed there wasn't a Kickstarter, so that's why.
Yeah, like I've worked enough on other friends' albums. Like I've helped some friends edit their albums, and I, you know, I have a background in radio, so like I've done enough digital audio editing to like know the basics. I'm not, you know, audio engineer, but I know how to do the basics of stuff that I need to do. So what we had was I actually got a film crew that came in. These student film guys got them on the cheap. They came in, had two cameras. They came in and shot. I had my camera that I had locked down, and then the Ice House has a camera that's locked down.
Yeah.
The Ice House camera has a feed from the board that comes out. So I had a clean feed of the board I knew I didn't have to worry about. I had microphones on all the other cameras, and I also have a fairly high-end digital audio recorder that I was able to use it's got like, you know, surround sound built in. It's got multiple mics built into the thing. And I had that set up on stage to capture audience stuff. So I was able to sort of take that. And I didn't even need to touch the sound from the cameras. Like, I just pulled that audio, the feed off the board. I was able to mix that together, get stereo mix. Everything came out fine. It is a slight pain in the ass when you do things that way. Like, when you do things on the cheap like this, you do have additional hurdles you need to jump through. Because, say, a camera, when it records, it says it's 30 frames per second, but really it's 29.97 frames per second, right? And your digital audio recorder might actually do a pure 30. It's not really frames per second, but it's like at that speed. So there's like a slight sync problem that crops up. So like I had to change the length of my audio recording, the digital audio recorder. It was like I had to change it to like 100.0013% or something like that. It was like barely faster. But over the course of 45 minutes, you wind up off by like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's like unusable at the end. So like it took me 3 hours of playing with different values to find that one, whatever it was. Like, it took me forever to get the sync right. And then once the sync was right, then I was able to do the edit. And I cut it all in Avid, because I use that for video editing. So I was able to just cut it all in Avid. And then I exported the sound out to some audio programs that I used to, like, smooth over wherever the edits were. There were, like, you know, 12 edits in it to drop stuff in for the second insert stuff.
Pro.
Yeah.
So it wasn't bad. Yeah. Export the audio back out to my audio program, you know, smooth over all the edit stuff, whatever, all the stuff you have to do for that.
Hey, we're hiring a producer, by the way. You know that. We're hiring a new producer.
You already told me earlier they're not making any money from this.
No, Louis's not our producer. No, that's not a producer. He's our engineer.
Yeah, so then I took the audio back, put it back into Avid, then, you know, all my color correction, whatever. So I've got video of it. I've got audio of it. The audio now, then you take that and you put it out through a distributor. So I use CD Baby. I've used them before. They do a good job, and they're not super expensive. It's like, you know, $50 or whatever. And then you get into, like, every major online retailer there is. So I'm in, you know, Amazon, Google, iTunes, Xbox Music, Spotify, you know, anywhere there's that stuff. And then I'm getting some physical discs made, and I'm actually looking at doing a thing where I might do, like, a DVD-CD combo pack and
that's
digipack.
A good idea, yeah.
It's going to be kind of expensive to do it. Just because the packaging on that stuff isn't cheap. That's really the money part of it. You know, but like the digital distribution now is so easy to do. Distributing video is expensive, though. That's still not an easy thing to do. I am pursuing getting it in the Amazon Prime, like, video on demand library. Because the Amazon is really great to deal with because they have a history of dealing with individual sellers.
Right.
So their whole network is set up to deal with you as an individual, right? Netflix, if you want to get your stuff in Netflix, they're like, fuck you, we're not dealing with an individual because we're a company and we just deal with distributors. So if you excuse me. So if you go to a distributor and you want to get your stuff in Netflix or iTunes, you got to pay a lot of money. Like iTunes is like $1,500, Netflix like $1,200.
Jeez.
Video on demand for cable systems costs about $7,000. And it might be worth it for some people. Like if you have that kind of, if you have that kind of budget or whatever, like the Netflix. If I had the money, I would do Netflix,
right?
Because the exposure I think you get from that, because Netflix isn't packed with comedy, on there. So I think there's like a good opportunity for exposure there. I just don't have $1,200 laying around.
It's $1,200 for you said for Netflix?
About $1,200, I think.
Louis,
yeah.
Can we borrow a couple G's?
Yeah.
So what are the stats on your download so far? Do you have an idea?
I have no idea. Like the reporting I won't see for a couple weeks. You know?
Oh, okay.
Like, and again, the money in a comedy album is not from selling it.
Right.
Just so you guys know. Like the money from selling discs at like shows or whatever, that's minor. Like you'll make, you know, I'll make my money back from that. That's not a problem. You know, we actually made enough off the door at the shows we did the Ice House to cover the cost of our camera crew. So like our recording costs were covered from the door of the shows we did. So like it wasn't even like out of pocket big outlay or anything. Like the real money comes in from SiriusXM airplay. That's where the money is in comedy albums these days, because Sirius pays royalties. And then what happens, like, you know, I submit stuff to Pandora and, you know, other places like that, and they pay royalties too.
Yeah.
But like, you know, Pandora, they play your stuff and you get like, you know, a third of a penny or whatever, right?
Yeah.
because it's a one-to-one thing.
So you can pay the Mexican money. Yeah.
Your track to one person.
Right.
On Sirius, when they play it, they're paying off the fact that they have 20 million subscribers. So when they play your track, they're paying a royalty out that's like a third of a penny times however many people they calculate listen to Raw Dog, which is, you know, 400,000 or whatever. And then all of a sudden you got like, you know, maybe they're paying a couple hundred bucks for the time they paid your track, right? So you can get some decent money if they play your stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they play my stuff, which is not a guarantee, you know, you never know what they're going to play or what they're not going to play. I don't know what they like. Maybe they like it, maybe they don't. But that's sort of like the goal is if they will play it, then I can make some good money. Because I have friends who've made, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on this kind of stuff as a comic. And you're like, there's not a lot of money in comedy otherwise. So, I mean, that's really a good outlet for it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's why I encourage people to self-publish with comedy albums, because there are some companies that will do comedy albums even if you're nobody, right? You know, you got a couple of them. You know, I won't go into the names, but you know, they're known by comics, right? One of them, I got a friend who did an album with a company. They flew her up to Seattle. She did a show. She did a weekend of shows up there. They recorded the whole thing. They did the packaging. They did the mixing. They did the editing. They did distribution on it, right? They paid her $1,500. To do the thing. She gets paid $1,500 from it, and now if she wants CDs, she can sell at shows. She just buys them from the company for like $5 a pop, which is if you're lazy, you don't want to do anything, that's an okay deal, I guess, right?
Yeah.
But what that means is she gave up her royalties.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if that gets played on Sirius or whatever, this company now gets all the royalties. So because she didn't want to do the research or anything to make that happen, now she isn't going to be getting the ongoing money off that, which is, you know, that's where you're giving to stuff. But, I mean, a lot of it comes down to, like, you know, comics, we're lazy people. You know, we don't want to do research into things, you know. And, like, every time I've worked on one of these projects for friends, because I've helped friends release albums, you know, probably four or five of them over the last couple of years. So, like, I've learned a lot about the process and what needs to happen and how you need to do it. And like, you know, when Grammy nominations open up in June, I'm going to send my album in for it, because just I did some reading on it. They said on average they only get like 40 comedy albums a year. That's it. I'm not expecting to get nominated or whatever. I'm like, I'll take a 1 in 40 shot at it. You know, it's not
in 400.
You know, it's like, you know, you don't have to send over a bunch of copies of it, but I mean, like, what's it going to cost me? $50 to do? Sure, fine, whatever. It's a, you know, and it's going to be listened to by people in that industry. They're going to have to listen to it. So, you know, it's like, there are things like that that you learn about that really comics, we don't even think about those things. Like, we just, it doesn't even come up in our normal discussions. We're so worried about, like, oh, who's booking that show with the Irvine Improv?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we pass up some things that could be better for us in the long term. So I really put a lot of research into that stuff. And then, so I'm, you know, I'm working on that now. But like, say for Amazon Video On Demand, one of the things I learned about getting your video up now, if you have video that goes into one of these big internet distributors, you have to have subtitles. It's an FCC regulation that went into place like in the fall of 2013. Like it's
so
been rolled out.
Do you do that yourself? Who does that?
I downloaded subtitling software. Like your companies, I looked into it. I was like, okay, there are companies that do it.
Yeah.
I could pay somebody $1 a minute to do it. So it's not a lot of money. It'd be like $45. But I wanted to learn the process. So I downloaded some subtitling software and I started sitting there. And it's really tedious.
And you know your freaking material already. So
yeah.
Just...
So I'm sitting there and it's like just looping. Like I listen to myself 8 seconds of myself. Okay. What did I say? Now I got to type that in. Okay.
Okay.
Here's the end point now. Okay. What do I say next? You know, type it in. And it's a little bit of a tedious process, but I have learned.
Did you actually type in the break for laughter?
I didn't put in.
Okay.
I mean, I could do that, but it's a little...
Yeah, that's a little douchey.
I feel douchey. Because, like, nobody that needs subtitles is going to listen or watch my thing. It's not. I'm not big in the deaf community, I'll have you know. I do have a bit about getting ear surgery, but still, the deaf community has not embraced me for whatever reason. And funny thing is, my ear surgeon actually did the same exact surgery on George Carlin.
Wow.
Which I remember he told me at the time, because I was doing stand-up back then. I think my first ear surgery was in, like, 2006, the first time I had it done. But I've had three of them, my ear surgeon, but...
Dang.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're fine
tell.
Now.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a hereditary thing.
So, Zakir is like, so are you going to do the Louis C.K. thing where you release an album every year, or what are your thoughts on that?
Every year, no. Because, look, you look at a guy like Louis C.K., and he's an anomaly, right? His work ethic is amazing. His talent level that it took him to get there is amazing. And it took him 15 to 20 years to get that first hour.
Yeah.
And then it took him probably another 5 years to get the next hour.
Right.
And then he was able to do an hour a year, right? It's not like he came in and after 10 years is like, oh, I'm going to write an hour every year.
Yeah.
He didn't do that. You look
so
at George,
you're kind of looking at it in that and saying respect for
your
own
stuff. Yeah, it's a long-term process. And, you know, like what I have done is I have said to myself, okay, I know these jokes that I've got on the album, right? I sort of got this hour, whatever, you know, 45 on the album that I could, you know, I could do an hour if I had an opportunity to do an hour. I could do an hour, right? So I've got that hour that I know works, right? That's in the bag. So now I'm sort of pushing myself to come up with a bunch of new things that are not part of that because I want to either replace things that get old, I want to swap things out. And also, you know, one thing I have heard Louis talk about is that people can see you do an hour on TV or get an album and hear that hour. And they go see you, and you do that same material. They'll be happy to have seen it, but they won't come back.
Yeah.
But if you get them hooked on that album, and then they come see you, and there's something different, they will come back because then they recognize that there's more stuff they're going to get the next time you're in their town. And you know, I'm really hoping to hit the road a lot more over the next couple of years. You know, that's really the main goal for this is to get some exposure so I can get more road bookings and all that kind of stuff. And you know, to do that, I want to go places and be able to have an album that people can buy from me at the show or whatever, and then they'll get some stuff on there that's different than what they saw at the show, and then like, things are different, and they'll come back, you know. And I don't need to retire this stuff because, look, it's not a big album. It's not a big special. It's not on Comedy Central or whatever. I get that. So it's not like I'm burning it where people are going to see this and they're not going to know, you know, they're going to be like, oh, that's all he does.
Right.
I'm not worried about that, but I do always like to be – you know, writing stuff. It's part of the job as a comic is to write new things. Because there's some comics you see and they just do the same act for 15 years. They're like, well...
So how much new material would you say you have now that's not on your album at this point? Because you've only just released a month and a half, exactly.
Since I recorded it. Stuff that I would say is pretty good.
Yeah.
Like 2 minutes.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense.
No, but that material is you've been working on that for a while, so you've been obviously
like in the month and a half since I basically recorded that album. I've probably come up with 2 minutes. That's pretty good that I think I could do on an ongoing basis.
Well, you've already generated 2 solids in a month and a half. Do you have like a pretty set like writing schedule? Do you have like a writing process that you?
No, that's
cool.
Like I used to, but like when I first started, I would always go to open mics and I would just get there like an hour early was sort of my deal, and I would sit there for an hour before the open mic and I would use that hour to write. And that's what I did every single time. And I would go to like 3 to 4 open mics a week when I was first probably 3 years I was doing it. And I pretty reliably wrote for like an hour every single time. And you know, it's like I wrote a lot of stuff and a lot of it was, you know, almost all of it was garbage. As you know, when you start out, everything you write is garbage, you know. But now what I found is over time, the best bits that I have come from just, you know, hanging out with friends. And you toss ideas out, not even thinking about bits, but you say things in the moment, and you're like, okay, that's a bit, and then you write it down, and then you decide I'm going to go work on it. And my writing process has changed, where it used to be I'd be the kind of guy where I would, like, take an idea, I'd sit there, I'd think about it, I'd write out word for word what I thought a joke should be, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's valuable to do when you're starting out. And now it's more like I'll jot down an idea, and then I'll just go on stage somewhere at an open mic and just talk about it and see what comes up. Because the pressure of being on stage and not knowing what you're going to say, like, you know there's an idea there. You don't know how you're going to phrase it, but you're standing behind a microphone. You have pressure. You have to say something. That sort of kicks your brain into gear and makes you say something, and I found that to be a better way of coming up with the actual joke should be.
Good job. That's more probably my style.
And that's actually what I'm trying to get to
as well. You write on stage.
Yeah. So you basically write on stage. I never write on stage. But
so
I mean,
how long have you been doing that new method?
Probably the last 5-6 years. Okay. I mean, I spent a good four or five years where everything was on pencil and paper, writing it down. I've got folders that I still have that I found one the other day, like my old comedy folder. I used to grab peachy folders. And I put all my stuff in a peachy folder for a reason. And I wrote everything on graph paper. That was like my deal. I loved writing on graph paper. I don't know why. I love writing. I think it's because I studied engineering in college, so like I still like graph paper. But wrote everything on graph paper, and I've got all these notes. I'd be kind of curious to go back and pull out some of the old notes and just like talk about those things on stage, see if there was anything there in those ideas I had back then. Maybe I just couldn't make them funny at the time because I wasn't skilled.
Yeah.
Right.
Probably not. But I might find out.
They're just bad ideas to begin with.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's some things that I think back and I'm like, maybe that was kind of funny, but some of it might be a little too inside. Like I remember one bit that I really liked doing at the time, which doesn't play out because people don't know it, but it was about how, in Mexico, when they have their national anthem played, like they do a salute where like it's like they're doing a chicken wing, where their arm is like out. It is audio here on a podcast, so you can't see me do it, but like you know, you put your hand over your heart, but turn your hand 90 degrees, so it's like perpendicular to your chest.
Yeah,
and they do this when they're there, and I always thought it looked kind of like they were doing like a chicken wing thing, and then I talked about how like their national anthem is so long that like their arms get tired and they might look like flapping over. At the time, I thought it was brilliant. Okay,
yeah. So now, that's the original chicken dance.
Yeah, you know, now it's obviously not funny.
it's racist.
But
no way is it racist.
You know, because that's also kind of thing. You know, you talk about things that are racist, and I've always thought there's a big distinction between racial jokes and racist jokes.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a big difference between those two. And one thing that's kind of interesting to me is, like, as a guy who grew up where I did, grew up in Pico Rivera, like, I know where the line is with Mexican jokes.
Yeah.
Like, I know exactly how far I can go, and I know what I can get away with, and I know how I can say things and have people enjoy them. With jokes about other ethnicities, I don't have that same thing where, like, I don't know where the line is a lot of times. You know, there's jokes that I told on my album that might even be over the line. Like there's a joke I do about black people and and about black culture and how black culture is the most accepting culture in society. Because I've got a friend, and he can wear hip-hop gear. He's Jewish, but he wears hip-hop gear. And the reason he gets away with it is because he's fat. Because to be accepted by black people, you just have to be fat. Like, you can wear FUBU, you can be Asian, you can be Mexican, whatever. Because black people know it's not about what's on the outside. It's not about the color of your skin. Being black is all about having heart disease and diabetes.
And, that's fucking hilarious.
That's so, fucking,
like,
racist.
I remember the first time I did that joke, and I was like, I was kind of scared to do it. Like, I didn't know if that was over the line. Like, I've even messed around with some stuff. It's not on the album. It's something I kind of want to go back to because I kind of like the parallels. But I did talk about how, people call redheads gingers, and I'm like, but it's really preferable if you call us gingers because the ER ending is kind of offensive to me. You know, I had like a whole thing about that, and I was like, oh, you know, maybe calling us gingers just because, or the guy who started Kick at Ginger Day, I was like, oh, he's just a racist guy who's dyslexic, like he can't spell, because his ginger is spelled G-I-N-G-E-R.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, and I had that, I've done that, and I've always been like, you know, I don't know if this is too far. And
was
that's the thing
the
I just need to play with.
Yeah, the crowd is all about your audience. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, I didn't really seriously pursue it as a bit, but, like, now I've got some freedom where I can go back and try some of these things because I'm not sort of locked into what I was doing before.
Yeah.
You know, I've got freedom talking about black jokes. It's good to do. No, so, I mean, it's one of the things, like, as a comic, you sort of you need to figure out where those lines are. And to find out where those lines are, a lot of times you have to cross the line and self-correct.
Someone has to say, whoa.
And that's one of the things that's like so annoying about culture today of like the, you know, the social justice warriors on the internet where people get upset over everything. And like you tweet something and then they like get really offended by your use of language or whatever. It's like,
oh, all the time.
And it's like, you know, can't – as a comic, you need that freedom to fail.
Yeah.
And I think with people with cell phones everywhere and all this kind of stuff, especially I feel bad for famous comics now. Like they have no freedom to fail anymore because they'll go on stage trying new stuff at the improv and somebody's got their fucking cell phone out recording them and it's going to go on YouTube and maybe it's just bad material they're workshopping. Maybe it's a joke they haven't tried before. Maybe it's just an aside they say and – it's not who they are. It's not what they do, but they're trying something out. And all of a sudden, that's what people are going to think. Oh, that's the guy who told the joke that was highly offensive about whatever, right?
Gays, fat,
and it's
right,
kind of, you know, I think it can kind of stifle some big name comics, like, you know, a guy like Chappelle or, you know, Daniel Tosh or whatever, right? You know, they're out there doing stuff and then they get recorded doing something and then, you know, that's probably why Chappelle's such a fucking whack job now and he melts down all the time.
Which is true. So now let's tell the guests one more time how they find you.
They can find me at funnymatt.com, or if they haven't enjoyed this interview, they can go to mattwalkersucks.com and tell me all about it.
You going to hang out for a little bit? We're going
to
record a little bit more.
I know where to go. What the fuck am I going to do? I got nothing.
You're also, an album.
Before you go, too, I want to make sure to get your excited. We put like a little piece of your new album in the podcast.
Yeah, cut it in. Whatever. I sent you the download.
Yeah, I got the information. Also, you're going to send us a link. But any comments
listening? Matt. You are asking our boss to actually work?
Oh, all right, whatever.
Is he your boss, really?
No, there's no way he's a boss.
Oh.
No.
Over you're
this is how the podcast works. We go to the front of Home Depot, we pick up Louie every Saturday. We bring him over here.
I'll tell you, I'm glad to not be at Home Depot this week. Last week I spent way too long at Home Depot cuz some girl
Yeah,
that's how it always starts, you know. You get talking to doing something because you're like, oh, I kind of think this girl's kind of hot, and then I wind up building shelves for her.
Oh, fuck.
They came out kind of fucking cool because I like to do stuff, you know, I always liked working with wood and things like that when I was a kid growing up.
But you like working with wood. Hey,
did she work with wood too?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, no. I'm still working with wood. That's the problem. But no, I did. I'll show you guys pictures of what I built. It's actually kind of cool. But
yeah, actually, it's on Facebook, too. I saw it. I've been stalking this guy all week doing research.
They're cool shelves, right? I built some pretty cool shelves, but yeah.
Right?
No, I didn't get laid out. Something, though. Yeah. See, like, I come in like a fresh face.
Well, it's the other way. Like, I can always tell when one of my ex-girlfriends has computer problems because I get texted naked pictures on my phone. And that's how I know, oh, she's got a problem with her computer, because that's how she gets my attention. I'm like, oh, okay, fine, I'll pay attention because you have a picture of your boobs. Then, all right, that's enough. All right, okay, what you need
and
to do
you
is
go to
the start
shelf,
menu.
Then...
and, yeah. You know.
Have her play with wood. All right, man, tell them one more time how to find you on your Twitter and your Facebook.
Go to funnymatt.com. I got links to everything on there. Or just look for Funny Matt on any website. I'm Funny Matt on everything. Everything. Okay. You can find me on Friendster at Funny Matt if you are old enough to know what that is. None of you guys know what Friendster is, do
I
you?
Do, unfortunately.
Wow. Yeah. That was
predecessor
like
to MySpace.
Friendster was the first social network.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, first one. But yeah, go to Funny Matt on anything and that's me, or just go to Matt Walker Sucks.
It's not Matt Walker Sucks, man. Well, this is Dim Nuts, but we got to wrap up this episode here. Matt Walker, thank you for coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming from all the way from Pico Rivera, wherever, L.A. But this is Dim Nuts. We're going to wrap it up. You can find us on all social media under Dim Nuts with a Z.
Not yeah, damn nuts sucks.
Yeah,
damn nuts sucks balls.
Get it before somebody else does. Because if you don't, I will.
Yeah, he's already buying it. All right, it's Darius. We're wrapping it up.
Out. Done.
Thank you for listening to Them Nuts Podcast. Hope you enjoyed the show. Stay tuned for new episodes and other Them Nuts productions. Be sure to like and follow us on all the social media networks and Podomatic.com, because we have got more to come.